Welcome to this week's episode of Zach on Film. Joining me this week is the one, the only, Steve Schleicher.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, what's going on, man?
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for letting me into your home. It would have been a very weird episode.
You could do this from your house. You've got all the equipment.
But it's more fun to come over here,
I guess.
So this week, we're talking a new digital release film that was a slam at Sundance.
Yes.
I got all the people talking. We couldn't get it in our theater, obviously. Too small of a release.
Yes.
And that movie is dope.
Yes, this is 2015.
Yep.
And this is what I like about, you know, if we had to wait for this to come out onto DVD, or heaven forbid, if we had a dollar theater for it to come to a dollar theater, it would be a long, long time. And the nice thing about what's going on with digital releases is we're getting these relatively soon after the movie has arrived. Now, granted, Sundance was back in January, and it's just now hitting North American theaters in June, and then it hit, I guess it was re-released in September and then hit our thing just like last week.
Last week.
2 weeks.
Yeah.
Two weeks ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm glad that we have that, because otherwise we wouldn't have the opportunity to see these films.
No.
A long, long time ago when we had VHS back in the dark days.
Right.
You know, my friend Brian said, oh, man, you've got to check this movie out. It's called Clerks, and it's so freaking hilarious, right? It's Kevin Smith's first movie. Well, our local video store only had one copy, and of course, then you could check stuff out for 4 days or something at a time, and it was hardly ever in stock. So when you finally got it, it was like, oh, I've got to check this out immediately, or put it on reserve or something like that so you could see it. Dope is kind of that same way. It's one of those special little films that didn't have a wide release, but thanks to digital now, it can be viewed and accessed by a much larger group of people.
Right. And, you know, I was reading an interview on like Huffington Post when Dope premiered at Sundance with the director, Rick Famuyiwa, who I looked for five different interviews to try to forget his name right.
Yeah.
He was talking about, apparently, because, you know, Forrest Whitaker. Yeah, Whitaker.
Yeah, yeah.
Is one of the executive producers on the film.
Mm-hmm.
And he also executive produced a film called Fruitvale Station, which I've been meaning to watch, which stars Michael B. Jordan. That they said that these two films suffered, kind of not really suffered, but had the same fate where no studio wanted to pick them up.
Right.
And then they went to Sundance, and then people were all jumping all over each other to try to distribute them. So, you know,
well,
it's interesting that a film like that.
When you think about, you know, the way that the film is pitched, life changes for Malcolm, a geek who's surviving life in a tough neighborhood after a chance invitation to an underground party leads him and his friends into a Los Angeles adventure. Just on that.
Sounds very generic.
Very generic and boring and blah.
Yeah.
Right. I mean,
When
I first read it, I was just like, that doesn't sound very interesting.
Mm-mm.
But it's a really good film.
And I think, that description doesn't sound great.
Does nothing.
But if you watch the trailer, you're like, oh, this is going to be awesome.
I think even the trailer, though, does a bit of a disservice, especially in how the movie turns and how Malcolm's character turns in this piece. And so I can see why a lot of people aren't interested in this.
I mean, the trailer rides pretty heavy on the geeky aspect and the 90s kind of throwback aspect of the film. And then that rides pretty high through the film, but when you get about halfway through, three quarters through, your last 15 minutes is when this film really becomes super something special.
Yeah, yeah. So why don't you do a rundown of what this movie is about?
Right. So Malcolm is our main character for Dope, and he is joined by his two friends, Diggy and Jib, who are these three kids who are growing up in Inglewood in a, what's the part of it? Like called the Bottom, is where I believe they're from. And they're all these 90 hip hop geeks.
They love everything about that.
They have all the 90s. They have all these MTV raps things on VHS they've been watching so they can get their clothes just right. They go to album stores. They can find old hip hop vinyls. And so that's kind of their thing. They're the geeks of the place.
But they're also very nerdy.
Absolutely.
They're very smart kids.
Very smart.
Malcolm is trying to get into Harvard that we find at the beginning of the movie. And they have their own punk band.
Right.
Which
Oreo.
Is interesting, too. Oreo.
Yeah. And it totally feels like a weird 90s thing to do. Everyone's like, let's mm-hmm. listen to rap. And they're like, mm-hmm. well, we like rap, but we're going to do this weird punk rock rap thing.
Yeah, yeah. Which the song, which is, I think, by, what's his name? Pharrell Williams
did all the music.
Did the music. And I think yeah. he wrote that song with, mm-hmm. I want to say A$AP Rocky also yep. co-wrote that, the mm-hmm. main song that they sing
yeah.
as a group, which I found it's very, I mean, I liked it.
Yeah, it's a good song. It's nice. You know, there is music throughout this film, and
yes.
like Malcolm and his friends that have the band, I was watching the extras on iTunes, and they actually made them sing all the stuff.
Oh, good.
So all their vocals for all the original music,
yeah,
obviously,
yeah.
they're the ones that actually
oh,
had to
cool.
do all of it. So they showed up in the studio with Pharrell, and they're all
yeah.
like dancing and stuff.
Oh, that's
so it's
cool.
great. So music is a huge influence throughout this entire film.
And people are like, what, Pharrell? What, Forrest Whitaker? What are we talking about? In addition to that, Forrest yeah. Whitaker, Pharrell, and Sean Combs mm-hmm. were all producers on this piece. And there's some other big names that contributed to this movie as well.
Right. Well, so. And you said A$AP Rocky, who's mm-hmm. a really famous rapper
mm-hmm.
Right now. He's actually in the film as one of the main characters, Dom, who's
right.
a drug dealer in mm-hmm. Inglewood. Mm-hmm. He plays a pretty critical role in the film.
And you know, that's one of the interesting things about the three characters at the beginning of the film. They are doing everything that they can to stay away from drug life and
mm-hmm.
criminal activities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, avoiding everybody when they can, even if that means occasionally having to take a beating at school by the, you know, the local jock bully.
Jocks or the Bloods.
Yeah, yeah.
Whichever that is that day.
Yeah. And so, you know, you're kind of got a little hope for these guys. But at the same time, you know, I used to have a flat top like Malcolm did.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I know. And but I know what happened with that. And he did get picked on a lot. And
right.
so when he finally has a chance, there's a girl in the neighborhood that he's totally in love with.
Right.
And when Dom tells him, hey, man, I want you to go talk to this girl and get her to come to my party, and I want you to come to my party and all this stuff, that's when things go south for poor Malcolm and his friends.
Right. They end up going to this drug dealer's birthday party in the club. There's some shady drug deals happening in the back. Police bust in. Boom, 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 boom.
But is it all police? Because it seems
no,
like the police come
police.
In late,
yeah.
and it seems like a rival gang
oh,
arrives
yeah.
first, starts a shootout,
mm-hmm.
causing the chaos, and then the police are entering. Malcolm, his friends, and the girl that he's, I forget what her name is.
Diggy.
Is that her?
Diggy is the girl and Jib.
No. I'm talking about
the
girl he's in love with.
Oh, I don't remember. Nakia.
Yeah.
Played by Zoe Kravitz.
The next day.
Mm-hmm.
Malcolm gets a phone call, and he's like, where'd this phone come from in my backpack?
Yeah.
And what else does he find?
Well, he finds a couple, I don't know, a kilo or
probably.
a lot of Molly, a little
yeah.
MDMA.
Yeah.
And he's in some big old trouble because Dom decided to throw some drugs in his book bag so he wouldn't get caught with drug possession. Malcolm has these. Who's going to expect a geeky kid
right.
from Inglewood to have a bunch of drugs?
Right. That everybody likes.
Course,
I mean,
yeah,
everybody
likes.
Knows that he's not related, involved in that world at all.
Right.
And this is where it gets a little weird because at the start of the movie, Malcolm is wanting to get into Harvard. And so he's proposing to his counselor that he write for his essay, a thesis on Ice Cube's A Good Day and tracking it down to the exact events in Ice Cube's life. For this day that it happened. So he had to have done all this research, and he thinks he's being very creative, and he talks about how, you know, this is his lifestyle, and he thinks that this would be something that Harvard really wants him to would find attractive. And
right.
his counselor's like, no, they're going to find that incredibly stupid. You need to tell them that you're a poor black kid from Inglewood,
right.
and you know you have to that you're trying to rise up above all this stuff.
Mm.
But that's not really how the story turns out for Malcolm.
No, he kind of becomes a drug dealer because, you know, he gets a phone call from one guy saying he's got to drop off the lunch in the Red Camino in front
yeah.
of the school. When he's about ready to do that, he gets a call from Dom in jail saying, hey, don't do that. It's either a cop or someone that snitched and they're
yeah.
going to kill you.
Yeah.
Don't do that. So then he hooks him up and he goes and he's got to he meets a guy that he's supposed to get the drugs to.
AJ.
Who actually ends up being the person he's supposed to interview with to get into Harvard.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this Harvard guy who's doing some shady drug deals.
Yeah, and he finds out that this guy is totally just exactly a product of his environment,
mm-hmm.
a drug lord guy
right.
in Inglewood that is running even kind of a shady business, a credit union kind of
yeah.
business, check cashing place.
Mm-hmm.
But he basically threatens Malcolm and says, look, Dom gave you the dope. You need to sell it, and I want my money.
Right.
And so, through some very creative means, Malcolm does sell this stuff. He does get involved with AJ's daughter.
Lily.
Lily. And she gets, I don't want to say overdosed, but she gets carried away on the Molly.
She gets, yeah.
And she runs naked through the streets and pees in front of a restaurant. And she keeps screaming, Lily, Lily, Lily. So the drug gets this name, Lily, and they sell it online, and they're doing all these transactions through the dark web and all that stuff.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
It is from that aspect.
That aspect, because especially Malcolm's first line of dialogue in the entire film is him talking to his mom in the kitchen about Bitcoin and how it's going to be the future of transactions.
Yep.
And then they end up setting up this drug-dealing website, help through Workaholics co-star Blake Anderson, who's in the film as, of course, a druggie.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're selling all this Lily for Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And they're trying to get rid of it. And eventually they do get rid of all of it. And they kind of run this drug thing out of their high school.
Yeah.
So eventually, you know, things start clicking together. You think, oh, they're selling all these drugs. And then the major twist, if you just want to jump there, is he goes back to the guy he's going to be interviewing with Harvard, throws a fake purse on his desk with 10 grand of cash in it, says the other 90% of it is in Bitcoin.
And by the way,
I scammed you so hardcore, and you're going to get found out.
Yeah, if you decide to take out all the money at once.
Right.
So he kind of protects himself that way.
Mm-hmm.
And he says the only way that you're going to, you know, get out of this okay as if you get me into Harvard.
Right.
And he does get into Harvard. He does get the girl. He does shave off his flat top.
Right.
And then he rewrites his essay to Harvard, basically saying, this is who I am. You've got character A, who's this nerdy, geeky guy, and you got character B, who is a drug dealer and does all these shady things.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you want at your school? And then, you know, there's a very long, and this is the last 15 minutes that you're talking about, where he's talking about, you know, if I'm black, if I was white, would you be asking me this question?
Right.
And it really changed a weird tone towards the end. I mean, I don't want to say it's weird because I thought it worked really well, but it just seemed out of the way it's almost like he's shooting a video, but he's actually writing the essay.
Right.
They certainly
break the fourth wall.
Yeah.
In that moment, in that section of when Malcolm starts rewriting his application essay to Harvard. And when he, you know, breaks the fourth wall, addresses the audience, and essentially reads his essay to you, is the moment I have thought about since I've watched this film, because it's so that in one conversation with the girl that he takes to prom, that he helps in the beginning of the film, kind of tie in a lot of the same things where Malcolm is saying, hey, student one is, you know, all A student, likes pop culture stuff, got a near perfect SAT. Student two is from a low income school with bad teachers and deals drugs. Like, close your eyes now, picture where they are. They're me. They're both me.
Mm-hmm.
And then so the whole movie's kind of building towards that. And then a line that Nakia says where you're not like that. You're complicated.
Yeah.
Which is this idea you kind of build through to the whole film. And then I just thought it was interesting that they just kind of went out and said, hey, this is what we're kind of doing. Like, we're showing you a complicated character, and we're just going to let you have to sit there and deal with it now.
Yeah. Now, but I thought that, I don't know, I was kind of hoping that Malcolm would have been able to walk on. But again, it goes back to the complication of the character. I was really rooting for Malcolm to stay on the side of right and figure this out without having to resort to becoming a drug dealer.
Mm-hmm.
Or after he was done with it, he would have walked away from the life. But he found out that he can't walk away from it, because even as he's talking about his essay, he's still dealing drugs and working with Dom, who's out of jail. So it's very...
You know, I went back and watched that again the day I got off work to do it again. And there is that one quick shot in there of Dom, and I can't figure out what he's doing. I can't tell if he's actually selling drugs.
Well, it looks like Malcolm is transferring something that Dom is then putting down in his.
So what I took for watching the second time, because the first time you think, oh, he's still doing this. The second time, what I think he gave him was the gun he used to point at the kids that were trying to rob him at the end.
So you're saying he's getting out of the life, and that's him cleaning up.
That I think it was Dom was helping him to make sure he was going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why he got the gun, because they never show Malcolm ever get a gun in the movie, but then at one point he has it. And so that's what I thought it was.
Yeah, yeah.
On upon a second watch.
Yeah. Okay, I can see that. I can see that. I mean,
but then I don't know if it was an embrace of the lifestyle or an acknowledgement that that's inside of him and he could slip down that path.
Okay.
Also,
I like that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's really interesting because I asked Aubrey, because she watched it with mm-hmm. me, and she really enjoyed it also. I was like, did you like that moment? That whole,
I like his
speech.
His whole discussion, his soliloquy to the audience, I thought was wonderful. I thought it was really good, and I thought it was point on, and I thought it hit everything that needed to be said about this character in his life, and by extension, other people who have gone through or going through those life experiences. So I thought it was really, really good, and it didn't get to the point where it's like, it didn't become preachy, which I also appreciated. Mm-hmm. And it was just spelled out in very plain terms that anyone can understand without trying to cover it up in some other language. So I thought it was very well done.
Mm-hmm. I was reading in that interview with the director, and he said he was writing this film after the Trayvon Martin shooting.
Yeah.
And so especially watching that scene again.
Yeah, especially when he's putting the hoodie on,
because he goes, why do I want to be in the Harvard? Would you even ask me if that was white? And then he puts the hood on and walks away.
Yeah.
Like, more sense.
That was a little heavy-handed bit right there, but... No, I thought it was super well done.
Yeah.
And,
I mean, directing overall, how do you think Rick did?
The directing I thought was fantastic.
Yeah.
I thought, the director really had a command of his actors. And, I don't know if many of these have done any acting. Chanel Iman, I don't think she's got some acting stuff.
She's got some small credits.
She basically has Dope and The Weeknd, Can't Feel My Face. Those are... two acting credits, but everything else she appears as herself in.
Yeah, that one's a
she's a model
video.
And music video type stuff. Yeah, and I don't know about
Malcolm is played by Shameik Moore.
I think this is his first one, isn't
first
it?
First film.
My God, that kid is just from the very start
is amazing.
He totally captures this '90s nerdish kind of guy, and he's very meek, and he's just a lot of times when he's confronted like. By Dom and the others, you can tell he gets very meek and he's just kind of mumbles his words out. But then when he's with his friends, he's very laid back and having fun and trash talking. And then when he's with his band, he's full of it. I mean, he just really carries the range and was super, super believable in that role and just fantastic. I mean, he's an actor to watch.
Yeah. And he was, I think he only did some small, like weird comedy Cartoon Network or something.
Yeah. Let's
weird
see.
Stuff.
He's been on House of Pain. Read Between the Lines, The Elf Story, The Elf on the Shelf, doing just a couple of voice work there. Joyful Noise, Incredible Crew, the TV series.
That's
he's on
what,
several episodes of that.
But what he's going to be in his next work
is
in Lars Berman's rap thing he's doing.
Which is what?
The Get Down.
Is that a TV show?
Yeah.
That's Baz Luhrmann is doing
Baz
that?
Baz Luhrmann's thing.
Oh, okay.
He's like the star of that.
Wow,
now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I definitely want to watch this because really, seriously... this kid, and I say kid, and I don't know how old
he is.
He's, let's see his full biography here. It doesn't even have his birth date on here. Born in Atlanta of Jamaican descent. That's all it has. Has his height, doesn't have his birthday. But man, this kid is good.
Yeah, he's wonderful.
And
I
know a lot of people are really, pointing to Michael B.
Jordan.
Yeah. As like this really good up-and-coming young actor. People need to be watching this kid because if he plays his cards right and people see Dope, I think he will land a bunch of other movies.
Oh my gosh.
So super quickly.
His range in this film is absurd, especially when, this is certainly a coming of age story.
Yes, it is.
And watching him go from this first line of dialogue, very confident, talking to his mom about really geeky things, gets out on the street. Mm-hmm. He just like there's times like I can't even understand what he's saying because he's like really soft
mumbling,
and quiet and mumbling.
Mm-hmm.
And then throughout the whole film, he just continually like gets this swagger around people and just gets more boisterous
confident,
and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And throughout the whole, it was just fantastic.
He is 20 years old, born in 1995.
Wow.
So,
jeez, that's amazing. And then his friend Jib, played by Tony Revolori, who is the best bellboy or hotel lobby
kid. Oh, that's where I was wondering. I was like, all through the movie, I was like, where the hell have I seen this kid? Where have I seen him?
We did that same thing last night. I was looking through the cast. I'm like, he was in Grand Budapest. Oh, he's the best lobby boy.
Oh, now those three, and then the girl, Diggy.
Mm-hmm.
Again, just really great acting by it. Now, Diggy, I think the girl who played Diggy, and I was trying to find her.
Kiersey Clemons.
She's had a lot more acting experience than the others.
Yeah.
And again, I thought she did a bang up job.
Yeah, hers was great. Her writing was so like tight and mm-hmm. quippy,
mm-hmm.
Especially when they got around that Blake Anderson character doing all the drugs and stuff. It was so good.
Mm-hmm. The interesting thing about her is that she, in the movie, is her character is a lesbian.
Yeah.
And she dresses like a boy. And so mm-hmm. one of the running gags is people are always mistaking her for a boy until she starts talking, or in one scene where she lifts up her shirt to try to get into a bar, into the club. Now,
good scene.
I should point out, though, she does not show her breasts.
Mm-mm.
We don't see that, but there is nudity in this movie.
Yes.
Lily Chanel,
who's a model.
Iman.
Yeah.
Is a model. She gets totally naked in this.
Yes.
And she also throws up on Malcolm, which is a great scene.
Wait, oh, gosh. Yeah, see, this movie was so, like, sporadically, absolutely hilarious.
Yeah, and what the funny thing was, I mean, when we look at the direction, to be able to jump back from very intense moments,
mm-hmm.
like the gunfight in the club and Malcolm and everybody trying to get out,
mm-hmm.
to these very quiet moments where he's in the car with Nakia, where he's just kind of mumbling. He's like, will you go to prom with me?
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, oh, no, I won't. You know, and then to scenes where it's just a big music video or the craziness of, you know, this chase scene that's happening mm-hmm. through the streets of Los Angeles as they're trying to get away from the bad guys, I guess.
Oh,
we'll
yeah,
just
those
call
guys,
them.
Yeah.
It is just all over the place, but it is a very super coherent story.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And I just the idea from the director to go that way and pull it off effectively.
Yeah.
I think is very cool, especially when, because we're in a smallish neighborhood, we see the characters crossing with one another,
mm-hmm.
Several times. Like, for example, when they're trying to get away, they get on a bus and drop off the phone that the bad guys are tracking them with. The bad guys stop the bus. Bus happens to be driven by his mom.
Right.
Later in the movie, towards the end of the movie, when he's having to decide what to do, his mom picks him up at the bus stop and drives him home. And then you make that secondary connection. Oh, yeah, that is his mom. So,
right.
You know, just these a lot of crossing over of mm-hmm. characters and stories and those kinds of things, I think, work really well. And so the script is well done. I think the directing is superb. The acting is superb. The music is fantastic. And if you're a fan of, you know, late 80s, early 90s into early 2000, rap and hip hop, there's a lot of this in here.
Oh my gosh. Absolutely.
And at the end, when the whole credits are running over the Humpty Dance and Malcolm is dancing the whole time.
Uh-huh.
It's so funny. It's so good.
To get ready, I pulled up the soundtrack. And mm-hmm. so I was jamming to that on the way over here.
Oh, to the Humpty Dance?
No, just the whole album.
Oh, okay.
The whole soundtrack for the film. It has got all like the, mm-hmm. you know, that decade of rap on there.
Yeah.
So it's so good.
Yeah.
You know, what I've really found incredible, especially now that you read that synopsis, is how complicated this film is, especially when they start doing, you know, flashbacks.
Well, just like you said with the character. It's complicated,
it's very
right?
complicated because, you know, they're doing, like right in the very beginning, you get a weirdly dark, humorous scene. They talk about how anyone, you could get shot anytime.
Right.
And they have White Tony in line playing his old Nintendo and he just gets dropped.
And then he gets, you know, it's at a burger place, which we go back to later in the movie.
Right,
it's the same hamburger restaurant or the same burger
joint.
Again. Yes. And it's like, oh yeah, Tony got killed. And the worst part was he was about to defeat whatever the main boss is on some game.
Yeah.
So it's very deep, very complicated. I cannot say enough about how good this movie is.
So what do you think the technical aspect of it? Because I think right away, the first thing that came out to me was the editing of the film.
Yeah, very tight.
Where there is a lot of tight editing, mm-hmm. and then they do a lot of interesting edits. Like in the, you know, they do a lot of like freeze frames. They do a lot of that mm-hmm. in there. But then they do really weird, like, I don't even know how to describe it, just crazy jumps.
Give an example.
You know, when they're in the club and mm-hmm. they had the fights going on, mm-hmm. and they do those like weird pauses, they're like almost like staticky images or something.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't even know how to describe it, but they were like so almost off-putting, but they kind of get you for this crazy,
yeah, for what's
chaotic
going on and how you're,
situation.
You know, sometimes when you're, things are happening and are tense, things slow down, and mm-hmm. you're only remembering these little bits and pieces. So I think any kind of jumpiness there, I think, only heightens
a
lot of the tension that's going on. Because, again, that scene starts out with a drug deal going wrong with another rival drug dealer coming in and shooting up. And then you cut to already police entering the club.
Right.
And everybody's already scattered on the floor and doing stuff. And that's like within seconds of one another. So, mm-hmm. you know, there's a lot of time compression going on there. Yeah, I mean, there's a little bit of a heist type editing in here because of the nature of having to take down AJ, who's the big bad guy. I think, did somebody say that this was, I don't know, there are themes of blaxploitation movies that kind of run in here a little bit. Mm. There are, you know, certainly music video plays a big influence in this a lot.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just, I everything is,
I mean,
really
they do
good.
A lot of time warping. Cause you know, there's the Malcolm going, with Lily.
Mm-hmm.
And then he sees Lily's brother drive through and they do a whole rewind mm-hmm. back to the burger joint mm-hmm. to actually show what happened there to mm-hmm. lead up to Malcolm going.
And that may be, I mean, because they don't rely when they're doing these time jump things and doing flashbacks, because after Malcolm has sex with Lily,
mm-hmm.
he comes back and, you know, she's saying, hey, turn around, we're going to have sex or whatever, go get the condoms.
Right.
And then it's like we cut right to afterwards
mm-hmm.
and he's coming out of the bathroom and he's like, well, where's my backpack? And then he flashes back to him talking to her about what was in the backpack. And then we jump back forward in time where he's looking for her.
Mm-hmm.
And then he finds her, snorting the Molly in the bathroom and getting crazy. And then everything that happens there. So that was a little disjointed as well. I think if the movie suffers from anything in the editing, is sometimes that type of storytelling, they're not consistent in how they use the device. So mm-hmm. oftentimes when we see like, jump back in time, it's black and white, or we see a flash frame, or in the case here at the car chase where we do the rewind, they do all of those.
Yeah, they do all of them.
And they're not, and so there's not this consistency that we as an audience watching this hold mm-hmm. as, oh, okay, now we're seeing something that happened before, or now mm-hmm. we're seeing something that happened at this point. Oftentimes that repetition helps the audience understand what's going on. And so if there is a failing, that would probably
sure.
be it.
You know, cause you don't like, if you think of a Memento, there was always like a thing to break, mm-hmm. you know, oh, mm-hmm. we just went back or forward.
Right.
I don't know. Memento was weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
yeah, you're absolutely right. Because there is so many methods for time distortion in the film. Especially, you know, there's the montage of the ending,
mm-hmm.
which was so well done because it was so out of nowhere.
Except that, and again, I didn't know what, you know, this whole soliloquy at the end where he's addressing the audience and breaking the fourth wall. I'm like, okay, so is he filming his message to Harvard, his application to Harvard? Is he just filming it? And then there's the scene where he's got this microphone in front of him the entire time. No mic cable on the mic.
Yeah.
And I was like, that totally took me out of the moment. So there are those kinds of things that happen. But for the crew that they had and the cast that they had a budget of $700,000 for this. So less than $1 million on this movie.
It's pretty good.
And they stretched that as far as they could go. And if you think about it, they had limited sets.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't do a whole lot of location stuff.
Nope.
You could probably name on your hands the six actual physical interior locations that they had in this piece. They did limited on street stuff, or if it was, I'm going to bet it's within the same couple of blocks.
I'm sure.
Movie made over $17 million. So a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about Straight Outta Compton and how this was a lower budget movie. Now this is a micro budget movie.
Yeah.
But the fact that this one made, what is that?
Eight, 20 times
its budget.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think people are going to look at more movies like this more seriously in the future instead of brushing them off. So for Dope, even though you said at the Sundance Film Festival, at Sundance, a lot of nobody wanted to pick the movie up.
Mm-hmm.
With the success of Straight Outta Compton now, more people will be looking at movies like Dope. It's not going to help Dope out here.
No,
but they're going to be looking at movies like Dope to see what can we do with that, especially when it has a huge turnover like this for very little money. And, you know, $700,000, that's nothing.
Yeah, I mean, these are the kind of projects you see that directors do something big afterwards, because they're like, oh, you did that with 700,000. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You made not only a critically acclaimed film, mm-hmm. but one that generated a crap ton of profit for everyone that invested into it. Yeah, yep. We're going to give you a lot of movie. And that's why, you know, Ava DuVernay, who directed Selma, mm-hmm. not a small budget, again, probably I would say comparable budget to Straight Outta Compton, maybe less mm-hmm. of a budget, especially coming out in December, January mm-hmm. when it came out. That's why she was in the talks to do Marvel movies. Because one, the film was amazing, mm-hmm. and she did incredible work with a smaller budget. And so that's what he's.
Yeah, no, that's cool. I'm looking at the director, Rick Famuyiwa.
Yeah.
He's a Nigerian-American Hollywood writer and director. He has worked on The Wood from 1999, which is one of those romantic comedies. Mm-hmm. And he also did Brown Sugar in 2002, which, again, another romantic comedy.
Right. His work, right, I expected to see some like time consistency to his work. But there seemed to be large gaps into it mm-hmm. recently, which I found really strange that he didn't really seem to be doing much.
He has a film about, looks like every 3 years. So The Wood was in 99, Brown Sugar was 2002, 5 years later, Talk to Me, 3 years later, Our Family Wedding, 5 years later, Dope, Confirmation is the latest one that's an original HBO movie. Mm. So, yeah, so it could just be because he's working in smaller budgets and you know, when you look at Brown Sugar and those are... again, smaller budget films that have producers like, in the case of, in the case of Brown Sugar, that one is produced by Michael Magic Johnson and Peter Heller. So again, you're not going to a big studio to get this, but again, Magic Johnson has a lot of money.
Sure.
So, you know, you have, and that was an $8 million movie. So he's doing okay as a director, but you're right. I think maybe he'll have some more stuff pop up if he wants to do it. And that's the other thing, too, is maybe he's comfortable with where he's at and maybe making a movie every couple of years. And some directors need to move from project to project to project so they can get as much money as they can and do as many projects as they can. Maybe he's somebody that is comfortable just doing a movie every couple of years when he finds something that he really likes.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely true. I mean, as I don't know what the case was for Brown Sugar or The Wood or anything he's done before, but on this one he wrote and directed it, so I don't know if he was
on Brown Sugar he wrote the screenplay, the Michael Elliott wrote the story in the screenplay, and Talk to Me it was also written by him and Michael Gannett. So
maybe he only likes doing stuff he writes, which can really spread out how many projects you're doing and you know, the frequency of that. And you know, obviously they said that this was pitched to studios, but a lot of his films seem to be not really bought up by studios or, you know, funded by studios initially by the distribution.
Yep.
So maybe that's just the way he prefers to work.
He did go to USC, which is cool.
Yeah.
He's got a double major in the semantic arts, film and television production, and cinematic arts critical studies, which is cool.
I also think he went to the Sundance Institute or whatever. They know.
Oh, yeah.
That,
he was the Sundance cool Director's Lab. Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 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 Yeah, good on him. Yeah. So this movie was... I mean, you said the only thing that you would
probably be a little bit more. I would say maybe just editing. A little bit more consistency in how you're showing those flashbacks, or you know, the couple of ways you could do that is from one character's point of view, the flashback should be consistent. Mm-hmm. If you're showing another character having a flashback, you could use another technique, but you'd have to be consistent with that. That would be my criticism. That'd be interesting. Not to say that really ruined this movie, because after I watched it, I mean, it was like when the credits were rolling, I messaged you and said, "Did you watch Dope yet?"
Yeah.
Because it's really good. And I think it was like almost midnight or something. It was. So it's like, I don't care if you're asleep or not. But yeah, this is a good movie. I think people should go check it out. It's small budget stuff, and I like talking about small budget stuff like we did with Slow West and others, and I'm sure we'll talk more about that in the future. What are your final thoughts on this movie?
I loved it. I think... it's probably one of my favorite films I've watched recently.
Oh,
like
okay.
I really, really dug it. Well, one of it is because I love like hip hop and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's a big thing with it. And seeing that, you know, they talked about comparing it to John Hughes movies or there's coming of age feature.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit John Hughes influence there,
and, you know, the John Hughes movies I thought were great, especially Breakfast Club, which is really the only one I've seen. But this one, if I'm going with you know, coming of age films for my time period. This one kind of hits it more than The Breakfast Club for me, specifically because of the character Malcolm, who's caught in between this geek thing and trying to be pulled in this other way, which I can relate to as being like this weird nerdy kid in high school, maybe being pulled with sports and stuff. So that certainly resonates with me. But I really, really enjoyed this film. I've already gone back and started rewatching different scenes in the beginning. And
What's in the iTunes extras with this?
Not much. Just like 2-3 minute things about the music and about how it's cool.
Yeah.
Essentially.
No,
you can see Pharrell in really weird. It's like Pharrell took John Lennon's glasses and a Elton John shirt. And that's how he did all of his interviews for the extras.
Oh, but he's not wearing his Arby's hat.
No, not wearing the Arby's hat, unfortunately, which I think he should just wear all the time.
Yeah, good movie. I do want to watch it again. I just haven't had a chance. I was going to this weekend, but I just got wrapped up doing other things and watching other things, and this one has slipped off. But it's definitely on movies that I want to watch again in the next 6 months. It's up there on the list.
Oh, sure.
Probably in the top 5 movies that I'll rewatch in the next.
It's going to be one of those movies that I'm going to push on every one of my friends to go watch, and they're probably going to get really annoyed because I'm not going to stop talking to them about watching Dope until they actually watch it, so we can discuss it.
Yep.
So I loved it. But that's our discussion for this week. Next week, I think we're heading back to the theater, aren't we, Steven?
Let's see. Next week is, Pan is this weekend. Steve Jobs, we talked about before, it's only opening in 9 screens in New York and L.A.
Right.
On the 16th, it's The Bridge of Spies. That's the Steven Spielberg movie with Tom Hanks in it.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people are talking about that. So when was the last time we did a Steven Spielberg movie?
The last one we did was Close Encounters. Yeah, we never did Indiana Jones.
I wouldn't be opposed. I mean, I'm not sure I'm really super interested in Bridge of Spies.
Yeah.
But the other one that comes out next week is Crimson Peak, which is the horror movie from Guillermo del Toro. And I think that's what we're going to watch. Both of those are going up against one another. One from Buena Vista, which is Disney, essentially.
Yeah.
And Universal with Crimson Peak. Also coming out next week is the kids horror comedy Goosebumps with Jack Black,
which the boys
have already decided that they want to go see.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Are they familiar with the work of R.L. Stine?
Mason is, because he's read, I want to say, maybe 6 of the books.
Oh, wow, okay.
My wife doesn't care for him because he would have to, like last year, as he was getting built up on reading, one of the exercises was you have to read out loud. And she read the mannequin one, whatever that mannequin's one is. And she got creeped out by it. She's like, those books are horrible. And so we were at Salina, and they already had a poster up. This was like several months ago.
Yeah.
Maybe in June or July. We were at another mall, and they had a big standee for Goosebumps. Mm-hmm. And Mason was like, oh, we're going to go see that. When does that come out? I said, probably around Halloween. And sure enough, next week, the 16th, Goosebumps will arrive from Sony Columbia. And that's about it for next week that I'm looking at that might catch people's attention. There's 8 films to die for. I have no idea what that's about. That's a horror film. All Things Must Pass, which is a documentary. The Assassin, which is an action drama. Beasts of No Nation. Oh, is that? That's that Netflix one.
Beasts of No Nation? Yeah, Netflix movie. Yeah.
But that's not releasing same time as on Netflix, is it? Is it doing Netflix? Because it says it's in a limited release. But I'm pretty sure that they're doing... I thought they were doing something Netflix and theaters at the same time so that they could qualify for a, like an Oscar.
Yeah, I bet so. You know, one thing I've been reading a lot about that I want to watch is the Robert Zemeckis The Walk. But I only want to
watch that one about
the one with the guy who did the walk between the Twin Towers.
Oh yeah.
With Joseph Gordon-Levitt doing a really weird French accent. Mm-hmm. But I really only want to watch it in the IMAX 3D to see if I can get
the vertigo.
The vertigo and see if I throw up people seem to be doing. Yeah.
So it's looks like we're doing Crimson Peak next week,
which would be great because the horror films that we've done on this show, there haven't been many. Uh-uh. First off, and the last one we watched was Poltergeist, which was not a horror film at all. And really, did we ever watch in the classic films? Did we ever watch very many horror movies?
It depends what you define as horror. I mean, today
Alien.
You might look at, that would be, some people would consider sci-fi. We watch Psycho. Some people today would call that horror, thriller.
Thriller.
You know, thriller is that genre. We watched Jaws, which some people could be considered a horror movie, I guess.
That's true.
So, we haven't watched a whole lot of horror movies.
Yeah.
I would say that if people are looking for horror movies to watch, one of our listeners sent us a rundown of the movies that he is watching every day during October. You can find it over at majorspoilers.com. Wow. It's called the Shocktober Horror Festival, I think is what the title of the piece is.
Cool.
You can find it in our featured articles. Let me see if it just pops up here. Yeah, it's called Shocktober Movie Fest 2015. And some of these movies include The Last House on the Left, Scream, Puppet Master. Further on the month, we have Eraserhead. And what else is in here? The Blair Witch Project. So, you know, there's a bunch of stuff in here if you want to get some horror movies going on in the month of October. You can find that over at majorspoilers.com. Just do a search for Shocktober Movie Fest 2015, and you will find that list there.
So, great. Let's get scared at the theater next week, Steven.
No, I'm scared.
Oh, I'll hold your hand.
Well, if it's your hand.
Okay. Yeah, my hand. So, I think that's going to wrap it up for this week's episode of Zach on Film. You know what you need to do right now, everyone? Go over to majorspoilers.com, find this podcast posting page. Go watch Dope, and then go over there, I guess. Give all your thoughts about that film. And maybe you saw it in theaters. Maybe you're one of the lucky people that got to see it there. Give your thoughts and feedback on the topics we discussed this episode, or just any other things that pop in your mind while watching Dope. While you're there, head over to Amazon.com through the link at Major Spoilers. You can probably pre-order your Blu-ray copy of Dope, I'm guessing.
It's available now
on the
shop video. Or this is a watch instantly.
Oh, yeah.
It's available. See, Blu-ray is also available on Blu-ray for $24.84. And it's got that Prime checkmark next to it.
Heck, so you know what that means.
If you're also into the music side of it, Dope Music from the Motion Picture Explicit by various MP3 downloads.
There you go.
There, it's all
over there.
I like
Amazon's music store. That's only going to cost you a little bit. You know, 24 for a Blu-ray, not bad deal.
Nope.
And you can use that Amazon.com link at Major Spoilers. Not going to cost you any extra. You're still going to go for that same great Amazon price. Get that free Prime shipping. But a little bit, we'll come back to Major Spoilers when you use the Amazon that way. I used it at work the other day. Bought a bunch of Polaroid film. Used the link.
All right.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Do my part.
Excellent.
Do your part, everybody. But that's it for this week's episode of Zach on Film. We'll see you next week.
This podcast is copyright 2015 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.